So we'd like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Lox and Learn in memory of Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leibas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov, the neshama should have in Aliyah. What we are going to do today is the second part of the shiur that we did last week. If you were not here for last week, don't worry about it. The things should make sense on their own. Either way, you can catch up. All the shiurim are recorded and posted on YU Torah, so you can catch up on previous shiurim if you missed them. But what we're going to do today is we're going to cover some ground, actually. We're going to hopefully, see if time allows it, cover four Mishnayos. And these are four Mishnayos that deal with the teachings of Hillel. Three have to do with Hillel, and one has to do with Shammai. Last week's introductory shiur, we did not cover any formal Pirkei Avos Mishnayos. We just gave a philosophical, theoretical, spiritual background into the different personalities and conflicts between Hillel and Shammai. And today we're going to see what their teachings through Pirkei Avos have, and hopefully by the end, pull it full circle to show how even what they say in Pirkei Avos fits within the framework of their different character and philosophy, etc., that we spoke about last week. So today the handout is a little bit different. It's within there are sources, but within an outline format. So some sources here, I just gave you the basic bare bones summary of what the source says, and we're going to go through it briefly, and then there's some that will go into a little bit more detail where you have the Hebrew, we'll translate everything. So let's jump into source A, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah 12, Yud Beis. The Mishnah says, Hillel v'Shammai kiblu mehem. Hillel and Shammai received the tradition from the previous people who we mentioned in the Mishnayos, Shmaya and Avtalion. Hillel Omer. So Hillel said, Heve mitalmidav shel Aharon, you shall be of the students of Aharon. Ohev shalom berodev shalom, you should love peace and pursue peace. Ohev es habrios, you should love humanity, people. Umikarvan l'Torah, bring them close to Torah. So let's break this down a little bit. So in the outline, starting with number one, where it says, Heve mitalmidav shel Aharon. So the Rashbam right away points out that this is in line with Hillel's character. Last week we spoke about how Hillel was humble. We saw many stories about his humility. And the Rashbam says this translates us into how we treat other people, loving people, pursuing peace, etc. Next part, Rabbi Elazar Azkari says that it's an interesting word, heve. What does heve mean? So we translate it as you should be. But it's more, Rabbi Azkari argues, transformative than that. Heve means a metamorphosis, a complete transformation of character. And he argues that even if you feel like you are not somebody who can love everybody, you're a curmudgeon, you're somebody who just likes to be alone in their room and, you know, people upset you all the time, he's saying there's a chance through hard work of Heve, you can transform yourself to be a student of Aharon. The next source, Rabbi Yosef Yavitz, says, why mention Aharon in the first place? You want to tell me something, you want to give me some message. Your message is, love, peace, pursue peace. Why are you mentioning Aharon? Just say, Hillel says, love, peace, pursue peace. We haven't seen other places as of yet that say, do like X. It just says, do X. Why are we saying, be like Aharon? So what does that add to it? So Rabbi Yosef Yavitz argues that it's because you might think, I'm too good. I don't know, not in an arrogant way. I mean, obviously Hillel wouldn't like you to say you're too good, right? But maybe I'm too religious. I have too much status. I'm too scholarly to go and muddle myself in, you know, sometimes arguments between husband and wife, between friends. They get down to the nitty-gritty, just stupidities of life. And maybe I don't want to muddle myself in that. Maybe I don't want to get stuck in the mud. So no, Aaron was the Kohen Gadol, and that didn't stop him. Right? So we have somebody here. The reason why we have to mention Aaron is to show that we have somebody of high prestige, and he's still getting involved with the day-to-day grievances between friends and couples, etc. So now, what did Aaron actually do? Right? If Aaron was writing a treatment manual, how do you create peace between people? What are his techniques? Can we emulate these techniques? So if you look in Chumash, what does it say about Aaron's Oev Shalom and Rodev Shalom? Absolutely nothing. Sorry? Right? In actual Psukim. It's interesting. We don't have any paradigm necessarily in the Torah itself, in the text, that says Aaron did this, Aaron did that. We don't know that Aaron was Oev Shalom and Rodev Shalom. This is Chazal extrapolating and telling us that this is what Aaron's personality was. So we have to look to see what do they want to teach us? What are these midrashic, because it's not in the text, methods that Aaron did in order to pursue peace? Some of them we might be familiar with. If you look in source 2.1, there's three things here mentioned in the Avos to Rabbi Nasan. Again, this is Hebrew. I'll translate it. Number one, 2.1.1. Davar, I try to make it as clear as possible within the outline form. Sometimes it's not so easy, but I think this is the best way so far. So we're in 2.1.1. Everybody see that? Okay. Davar Acher. So this is what he did. Have mitamidav shel Aaron, melamed shahaya Aaron shoel b'shlom bogdei Yisrael. People who weren't religious, they didn't follow the Torah. And there's even more than that. Their boged is stronger. So they're almost anti-Torah. So you have people who are anti-Torah, so what would you say? So stay away from them, leave them alone, maybe make fun of them, maybe, speak lashon hara about them. No, that's not what Aaron did. He wanted to do a sin. So Aaron basically would say hello to everybody and say, how's your day? How you doing? And now this guy's about to sin, but now he's thinking like, oh, I'm gonna see Aaron tomorrow. And I'm going to have to tell him what I did last night. I'm going to have to tell him what I, X, Y, or Z averos that I did. Maybe I'll stay away from that. So just by creating that connection, by having somebody to say hello and to talk to have a kesher, a connection between Aaron and these Bogdei Yisrael, was enough to create peace. Here the peace is both Ben Adam L'Chavero, because Aaron here is open and welcome to other people. But there's also an element, I think, here of peace Ben Adam L'Makom. Because Aaron's also creating a context where the Jews are treating God better. There's peace between God and the Jews because they're doing more mitzvahs. So that's one technique Aaron had. Very simple. Say hello. Say how you're doing. To everybody. Even Bogdei Yisrael. 2.1.2. So now we have a fight. Forget about Ben Adam L'Makom, and now we're talking about Ben Adam L'Chavero. Two people have a fight. Halach Aaron v'yashav lo etzel echad me'am v'amar lo b'ni re'echa v'ercha mahu omer mitaref eslibo v'koreas begadav. Look, your friend, he's sitting in the corner there and he's so eaten up by the fact that you guys are in a fight. It's so distressing to him. He's ripping his clothes. Omer oili heyach esos enai v'eres chaveri boshti him, and I can't even look at him because I'm so embarrassed. Because he's saying, right? So again, let's give people names here. So Reuven and Shimon get into a fight. Aaron goes to Reuven and says, "I just spoke to Shimon. He's so eaten up, and he's saying I feel so bad for what I did to Reuven." So now, Hu Yashav Etzlo Ad Shemasir Kina Melibo. And I think there are a number of sources. I chose this one specifically because I think this line is really important. Aaron then sat with this guy until the jealousy, the hatred, was removed from his heart. He didn't just say this and leave. He said it and sat. And, I assume talked to him. He didn't just sit there silently. Maybe he did. Talked to him, discussed it with him, let the guy vent his feelings maybe. That's what Aaron did. Now he goes to the other guy. And he says, oh, your friend, he's so eaten up by what he did, and he's so sorry, and he really is embarrassed to talk to you, and doesn't want to look at you. And then all of a sudden, they meet, they greet, and they get together, and everybody lives happily ever after, right? So the point here is that Aaron went, and this was his technique. So now, let's just take it down to reality for a second. So I assume we have, looking around the room, a bunch of therapists here. So would this be a good technique, right? So you bring one into the room, and you say, she really feels bad. And you bring the other one to him and says, oh, he really feels bad. And then all of a sudden everybody gets, lives happily ever after. It doesn't usually work like that. And there's an interesting religious question here. How can Aaron, presumably, the way it's presented here, seems to be lying, right? He's going, his technique is to make the other person think that the other person doesn't care. But the other person does care. This only works, this move that Aaron's making only works if they buy into this lie. Both of them have to buy into it. So how can Aaron lie in order to create peace? Right? This would be a suicidal move if you're a therapist. To lie to the other person. I don't want to know. Has it worked? What? Okay, maybe Socratically gives a little... Right. That may be... Right. Okay, so maybe Asti doesn't tell him. Here, Aaron doesn't seem like he's doing it, but maybe he does. So maybe he can present it as a question. Maybe that person regrets it. Maybe that's a good technique. But so just before I get to your question, in terms of the religious things, there are some sources who say that, yes, lying for the sake of peace is okay. Right? Not always, and this is dangerous. Right? So you have to know the context. Right, correct. Yeah, the Gemara brings a number of sources that God even lied in order that Avram doesn't get upset at Sarah for the way that Avram presented his speech, and then Reuven and the brothers lied. So there's a lot of sources for this. This is a broader theme that we could go into, just we're not going to do it right now. But lying for the sake of peace is okay. Again, there's limits to that. I can't continuously do things that are bad, and then, you know, when my wife asked me, you know, where were you? Like, okay, you know, lie for the sake of peace. I'm going to tell her that I was, you know, learning in the base measures, right? This is not an excuse to do things that are bad and then lie about it. But in certain contexts, with nuance and with proper understanding of when this is allowed, this was Aaron's technique. Yeah. Okay, so that's where we get into even... I would rather... exaggerating the truth. I hear you. Part of me rather say it's lying, so at least we know what we're doing. But I hear you. Maybe the art... Rav Dessler talks about this. Right. Right. So Rav Dessler, and I'm going to... This is the last point on this topic, because we've got a lot to go on. Rav Dessler actually makes this point where he says that it's not actually... He says it's not lying. He says that we define lying as, you know, truth versus not truth. That's what says lying is what the Torah tells us is okay and not okay. And if the Torah tells us we can quote-unquote lie, that's not lying. Right? So in cases of shalom, that's not lying. Again, it's a dangerous concept, but we need to understand the nuance properly. But let's leave it for now. So that was Aaron's method number two. Aaron's method number three, and this is in terms of between man and wife. V'chen isha yatzo v'mishto m'shachem v'besa by Aaron holach yatzo. This is 2.1.3. So basically just outside, husband and wife get into a fight, and Aaron goes to the husband and says, you know, what are you upset about? And he says, my wife is X, Y, or Z. And he goes to the husband and, what are you upset about? My wife is, you know, A, B, and C. And Aaron basically guarantees both of them. It's another interesting thing. He guarantees both of them that the other person will stop being the way they're being. It's like, I guarantee you he will no longer yell at you. I guarantee you that she will do whatever. How did Aaron make that guarantee? Because he's Aaron. Okay, again, this isn't necessarily a technique we would use. And I think that it's important to realize, and this is going to be more of a thinking takeaway, not a practical takeaway, is that we do have three techniques of Aaron. Number one is just be nice to people. I think we could all take that and put that into practice. Number two and three are a little bit more difficult, a little more challenging, and need to be done with more expertise, and maybe you need a personality like Aaron to even pull these things off. And my question to all of us is, how can we think about other ways, more maybe modern ways, maybe other different techniques that we can use in order to create peace between people? The Sfas Emes, in the last source on the page, basically makes this point and says, where it says five, so a little bit more background. Remember, Hillel says in the end here that you should love people and bring them close to Torah. So the understanding is that by loving people, you bring them close to Torah, and by connecting to these quote-unquote Rishayim, you bring them close. So if they say, look at this, again, Aaron is going to see me tomorrow, I'm not going to sin. Sfas Emes says, nowadays it doesn't work. Nowadays what happens is that the Rav, the Rebbe, this prestigious person is talking to me, ooh, look how great I am, and then he doesn't change. Because he thinks, like, I'm great, I'm awesome, and it's sort of it elevates his arrogance. So I'm only bringing this up to say that the Sfas Emes, so what's his answer? He says, Aaron was different. Aaron was an expert at this. Then again, so what's the practical takeaway?
practical takeaway, I think, is we need to find what techniques work. If Aaron's techniques wouldn't work because you don't want to get caught in telling two people that, you know, they think this way and they think this way, but they really don't. So you got to be careful. Just use what works. I'll close the section with a story that Dr. Palkovitz says about how he got married. So he went out with his wife before they were married. They went on a date, and they both were sort of par of about it. And they said, okay, it's nice, but we're not going to go out any further. Then his wife's brother called him and said, you know, my sister really likes you, and she's sort of feels bad and regrets that you guys broke up. And then and he told the sister, you know, David really likes you, and he really feels bad as he grows up. And they went out on the date, and then they ended up getting married. So this is like a perfect Aaron here. He did lie. But Dr. Palkovich's point in the message also is that, in terms of dating, is that sometimes all you need to go the next step is to realize that the person actually likes you. So a lot of our self-doubt is like, I don't know if they like me, so I don't really like them. And then we get into this whole questioning and whatever. Is that if you knew the person liked you, then it's easier to attach them. It's easier to create that relationship. Let's box that off for a second. We'll take questions at the end. Okay, so write down questions. We'll take it. Number three. Okay? Why the repetition? So why does it say Ohev Shalom in Rodev Shalom? Seems to be repetitive. Love peace, pursue peace. Just say one or the other. So what's the double language teaching us? So here we have six different explanations. We'll go through them quickly. Rabbeinu Yonah says that they're each referring to something different. What's the different thing? So Rabbeinu Yonah says the Ohev is referring to emotionally. I should love peace emotionally, but it's not just enough to love peace emotionally. I have to be Rodev. I actually have to do the behavior. I have to go and try to create peace. So I can be, we have to be proactive. It's not enough to sit in your house and say, oh, I love everybody and I love the world and I wish everybody loved each other. Yeah, go do something about it. So Ohev Shalom, you need both. Ohev Shalom and Rodev Shalom. We're not going to read that inside, but it's there if you want to read it. The next 3.2, the Meiri says, Ohev is others and Rodev is own relationship. So you have, again, this is a, I once did research on this, but I didn't find anything conclusive, just some rumors that family marriage therapists have a higher divorce rate than the common population. I don't know if it's true. I once heard it. I tried to find it. I don't think there's any actual research on it. But the Meiri is coming to counteract that. So Ohev is you need to create peace in others, but don't forget you have to be Rodev in your own life. You have to make sure you're peaceful in your own relationships. In a twist on this, in the next source, the Ahavas Yisrael says, no, you got it all wrong. You first have to be Ohev in your own relationships, and then you could be Rodev in others. So the sequence, he says, is first you got to fix your own relationships, and then you could be able to help other people's relationships. And the Knesset Yisrael, the next one, goes even a step deeper and says, not just relationships, you have to be Ohev yourself. You have to be able to feel good about yourself, to know yourself, to integrate the different parts of yourself, bring the peace within your own self, and then you can go and be Rodev with other people. Finally, the last two, one more idea here, similar idea. The Ravan says Ohev is locally, so it's one thing that you can pursue peace when you are in your town, you're in your home, you're in your community. Rodev is, yeah, even if they, like, you know, the people you're trying to create peace within, they move to Pennsylvania or they move to Israel, they move to whatever, you have to be Rodev it. You have to go after it. It's not just enough to stay local sometimes. You got to actually get in the car, get on the bus, and go try to create peace farther away. And then 3.6 of Avram Farisol says, Ohev, it's nice if you can do it in a calm fashion. So you sit there, you have everybody, it's a cup of tea, and everybody's nice and talking about it to each other. And the Rodev is when it's not so easy. You got to put some extra effort, some grit. And I think this is important because it's easy to help people when it doesn't affect us, right? But sometimes we get so ingrained and so enmeshed into other people's problems that, and we need to know how to create the barrier, but sometimes it creates anxiety within us. My life would be much easier if I sat home and watched TV all day, right? But if I go out and try to get again involved with other people's problems, then my life is no longer as peaceful as it was if I would be watching the Yankee game. But That's not an excuse, right? So Ohev Shalom is when it's easy. Rodev Shalom is even when it creates some level of uncomfortability within you. You got to know your limits. You got to self-care. We're going to talk about in the next in two Mishnayos. But that's what Rav Avram Farisol says. The last piece in this Mishnah is source number four. It just sort of recaps and brings everything together. The way that you are, if you put the three statements of Hillel together, you have be like Aaron in terms of pursuing peace. You have loving people and bringing them together. It's just one, the Tiferes Yisrael says it's all one package deal. The way that you bring people close together is by loving them. That's the way to do it. You got to show unconditional love. That's how you create, that's how you do kiruv, that's how you connect to people, that's how you get them to love Torah itself. This is an interesting Tiferes Yisrael as a side point. I'll just leave this as a for future reference. This Tiferes Yisrael points out that when it says Ohev es HaBrios, so who's Brios? What does Brios mean? Mankind, humankind, everybody. He says explicitly, even Goyim. So when you deal with the discussion about the difference between Jews and non-Jews, etc., which we can give a shir on at a different point in time, this Tiferes Yisrael is key. He says that you have an explicit Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, Ohev es HaBrios means love everybody. I don't care where they're from, what religion they are, love everybody. Again, there's limits, we have to discuss that within the proper context, but this is one of the Mari Makomos. Because this is Mishnah 12. Flip the page. Mishnah 13, we're not going to spend a lot of time on. I'll give you some references, and I think we're going to talk about the topic within Mishnah 13 in a future Mishnah. But I think for today it'll be too much to do, and since the topic comes up later, I figure we'll push it off. But just to read the Mishnah inside, so Hillel used to say, and this is in Aramaic actually, it's one of the few Mishnayos here that'll, if you know Hebrew, you might not know what this is talking about. Hu haya omer, negad shema avad shemei, udelo mosif yasif, udelo yalif katla chayav, v'deshtamesh betagra chalaf. Which means it's four separate points that are connected to some extent. It says, a name that is widespread loses its fame. Basic idea here is that you want to be popular, probably not going to end up good for you. Right? The more popular you become, the more famous you become, that's when people start getting an interest, just to bring it to a modern idea, that's when people start looking for stories to dig up against you, that's when people start caring about all the nitty-gritty details in your life, and then they'll find something, and then your whole career comes crashing down to an end. So I think Hillel's message here is connected to past Mishnayos, which we saw in terms of connecting to the government and creating a name for yourself. Hillel's saying is that don't be so obsessed with creating a name for yourself. It's not necessarily going to turn out good in the end. And then one who does not add to his knowledge causes it to cease. And I think we see this also. Once you stop learning, you're done. You got to keep learning. Every day you got to grow a little bit more. You stop using your brain. You don't do your Sudoku puzzles. You don't do etc. Again, your brain stops working. So you always got to learn. You always got to keep moving. Next, he says, whoever does not study Torah deserves death. A pretty extreme statement. But again, Torah is our life force, and we have different sources saying that when we don't study Torah, either personally or as a community, there are consequences to that. And then finally, Dishtamish B'tag Achal, whoever makes unworthy use of the crown of learning passes away. Again, a critique of somebody who uses honor of learning, so somebody who's a scholar who uses it for their own purposes, their own motivations. Just the one source we'll see on this is the next source, source number six. And the Meiri says, "Hu haya omer rotzo lomar Hillel." So Hillel was one who used to say, "Negad shma avad shmei kolomar," meaning to say, "Kol she'osek b'Torah keneged pirsum Hashem." If the only reason you want to learn Torah is in order to become famous, rotzo lomar shelo lishma, so you're not learning it for the sake of Torah, for the sake of God. Elul is gadol liknos shame. If you just want to become big stature, then you're going to lose your name. That's it. When you learn for the wrong reasons, either as a, I don't know if you want to read this as a punishment from God or just as a natural consequence, eventually you'll get caught in your own trap. Later we will talk about the concept of the motivation for learning, what lishma means, etc., and misusing that, but we're going to table that for now. This is the next Mishnah is a famous Mishnah, Mishnah 14. Hu haya omer, im ein ani li mi li, Kshani la'atzmi ma'ani v'im lo'achshav emasai. If I'm not for myself, who is for me? But if I am for my own self only, what am I? And if not now, when? So this is obviously a deep concept. What exactly is going on? So first, source number 7, Rabbeinu Yonah says, Uaya Omer im ein ani li mili im lo ochiach atzmi she'ezarez atzmi b'mitzvos mili l'ochiach ulizarzeni. If I don't motivate myself, who's going to motivate me? We all look for other people to inspire us, to motivate us. Hillel says, im ein ani li mili. It's up to me. Can't rely on other people. It's me. Ki zeros ha'cherim tov. It's nice to get motivated by others, but hu lefi sha'a. It's for a moment, a momentary inspiration. Kishi o'er adam es asma, but when I can do it to myself, when I learn the technique of being able to motivate and inspire myself, then I have that tool at all points in time. So don't rely on others to inspire. Rely, teach yourself how to inspire yourself. And when I was in YU, a good 10 years ago, this point resonated with me a lot. There were a lot of people I felt who were sort of complaining that maybe the atmosphere of the school is not good for my spirituality because I have to learn all these secular subjects and whatever. It was a whole big discussion. We're not going to deal with that now. But I just said to myself that this is up to me. I could look for other people and blame that they don't provide enough guidance, they don't provide enough support, which they do, and I think they do a great job of it. But if I just wait for other people to come to me and hold my hand all the time, guess what's going to happen? When you get to the real world, that might have been nice in high school, might have been nice in yeshiva in Israel, but when you get to the real world, nobody's holding your hand. And if you don't learn, im ein ani li mili, right? Or the Chazal, the sages have in the Gemara, another similar term, ein adavar talui ela bi. This is only up to me. I can't wait for my parents, I can't wait for my friends, I can't wait for my spouse, I can't wait for my kids, I can't wait for anybody else to get me going, to inspire me, to motivate me. It's all up to me. So that's Rabbeinu Yonah's point. The Rambam in source number 8 has a similar idea, and he says, if I don't inspire myself, miyaira, again, same idea. Who's going to inspire me? But he continues, there's nobody outside, external. He explains that in a different place. Since it's up to me to push myself in whatever direction I can choose, this is similar to the language of the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, I have free will to decide what I want. So ask myself, what good have I done? Now he continues, it's up to me. Ma'ani, what did I do? What have I done? Ma'ani, klamar ezadav or bamimani. What have I effected? Have I done everything that I can do? Hine ani lo shalamti. Afal pisha adati zayin. I haven't done enough. So it's a humility point. I have to do for me, but I didn't do enough for me. And then, so what's the message? Im lo achshav ematai. I haven't done enough, so when am I going to do it? Now. Now's the time. Achar kach shava amar v'im lo ekna amaylos at. If I don't do it now, when I'm younger, or even when I'm old, doesn't matter. Right now, I have the moment in front of me. When am I going to do it? Procrastinate, push it off. It's not going to work. This is a good mantra for all of us, which is everybody who procrastinates. Imlo achshav ematai. Just put this on your computer screen. Put this on your wall. Put wherever, on your phone. If I don't do it now, when am I going to do it? I'm just going to push it off. So that's the Rambam. Final idea within this Mishnah is a very deep point by the Shari Yosher or Shimon Shkup. You can find, I gave you a website there. This is his introduction to his very analytic Talmudic Sefer called Shari Yosher. But in the introduction, he gives this deep philosophical idea. And it's a long piece. I just pulled out the one element that's relevant for us right now. But I do recommend that you read it in that site. They translate the whole thing into English. So Rav Shimon Shkup basically creates this idea of how do you balance doing for myself and doing for others. So this is, if you want a source on self-care in Chazal, in the Torah, this is your source. It says, how do I balance myself and others? So let's go through the Mishnah. Im ein ani li mili. I got to be for myself. But if I'm only for myself, then what am I? Right. So now let's I'm going to give you one little bit more drop of background before we read this. So he starts off the piece by saying there's another element here. The Torah says, Kedoshim Tiyu, you should be holy. What does it mean to be holy? Define. What does it mean to be holy? Separate. So Rashi, Rabban, talk about Rashi says, you know, stay away from Arayos, stay away from, you know, be careful in your sexual relations. Rabban says, precious in general, you should just be, you know, move a little bit far from even the things that you're allowed to do, some sort of asceticism to an extent. Rav Shimshkov says, yes, but it also means something else. Kedusha, he argues, means giving over completely to others. How he gets there, why he gets there, let's just take it for granted. Kedusha means giving over completely to others. When it says Kedoshim Tiyu, what does Chazal say? I think Rashi quotes it. It says, Yachol Kamoni. So God says, you should be holy. Yachol Kamoni, you think you can be as holy as me? Therefore it says in the Pasuk, how does the Pasuk end? Ki Kadosh Ani. I'm holy. You have to be holy, but don't think you can live up to my standards. So Rav Shimshkov says that what the Torah is telling us is that Hashem is the only one who completely does for others without relying on him, without taking care of the self. We can't do that. We can strive for taking care of others, but Ki Kadosh Ani, only God can do it in full. So we need to make sure we take care of ourselves. With that background, now let's see how he says this. I'm just going to read the English for the sake of time. In my opinion, this idea is hinted at in Hillel's words, as he used to say, if I am not for me, who will be for me? And when I am for myself, what am I? It is fitting for each person to strive to be concerned for himself, but with this he must also strive to understand that I for myself, what am I? If I'm only for me, then that's not enough. If he constricts his eye to his narrow domain, if he defines his eye as just me, limited to what the eye can see, meaning him, then his eye, what is it? Vanity and ignorable. But if his feelings are broader and include all of creation, that he is a great person, and also like a small limb in this great body, then he is lofty and of great worth. In a great engine, even the smallest screw is important, if it even serves the smallest role in the engine. For the whole is made of parts, no more than the sum of its parts. Meaning, im ein ani li mi li, I have to be for myself. But if I define myself as just me, Shani Atmi Mani, then what's the purpose? And the way Rav Shimshkov goes on to explain this is basically think about it in terms of circles. How do you define self? If you only define self as me, then you're losing it. If you broaden your definition of self, self includes my family, self includes my community, self includes my nation, self includes, he even goes so far to say, all humanity and even nature. Right? So if you have to start with self, and then you could broaden your definition of self. So this is hinted at or explicit, according to him, in the words of Hillel, im ein ani li mi li, shani la'atzmi mani. But I can't just define myself as me only. I have to expand it and broaden it. Quickly, please. Yes.
Okay. So going along with the idea of giving yourself to others, that absolutely means to give yourself to others. But sometimes,
so I think your point is exactly what Hillel is saying, is that you have to start with the ani, you have to build your sense of self, and then only after you build your sense of self can you actually give over to others. If you're giving over to others because you don't have a sense of self, and because you just have to, you're a yes man, a, you know, bobblehead, everything you say, I'm afraid to say no, then that's not it. Right. That's because that's not Kedusha. Well, that's Kedusha that we can't attain. Right, that's God's Kedusha, is that you only give for others. Humans cannot do that. Humans have to take care of themselves, and then only then they could take care of others. Okay, yes, quick, yeah. Right, same idea. Can't love others till you love yourself first. Similar concept. Now, okay, we're sort of a little short on time. Let's try to try to get there. Go to the next page, D. It's not bad. We're going for 40 minutes. A little bit more time. If anybody has to leave, I understand. Again, today's schedule is a little bit thrown off. Last Mishnah, Shammai. So we did three Hillels and now Shammai. So Shammai used to say, think about the kapdanut, the extreme personality, almost the way Shammai just kicked the gear out. Said, you know, get out of here, stop bothering me, stop wasting my time that we spoke about last week. And now read this Mishnah and you're like, what's going on here? Right? Shammai Omer, Asei Toras Lakeva, so make your Torah permanent, established, regular. Okay, that I can understand. And Mor Ma'at Vasei Harbe, say little, do a lot. What does that remind us of? Where do we see that concept? In the Torah. Where do we see that? Who's our paradigm? And Mor Ma'at Vasei Harbe. And the opposite. So it's Avraham says, you know, I'll give you a little bit, and then he ends up bringing them a whole meal. And then Ephron is the opposite. He says, you know, I'll give it to you for free, and then he ends up charging him, you know, double, triple the price, whatever it is. So, and more ma'ad ba'asei arbe. And then finally, ve've mekabos kol adam b'sever panim yafot. Greet everybody with a pleasant countenance. Smile. Be happy. Have positive affect. Okay, so let's jump in here. In terms of number one, Asei Toras Hakeva, source number 10, the Avodas Yisrael here gives a number of different explanations as to what Keva means. What does it mean, established, firm? So you can understand this in a whole loads of different way. Does it mean that you can only learn Torah? Right, Asei Toras Hakeva, that should be the only thing you do. It's permanent, it's established. Or does it mean, no, you have to go out and work and live your life, but make sure you create times that you do not miss ever, unless there's extenuating circumstances, during that Torah period. So you have a morning Seder, you have a night Seder, yeah, so you learn a little bit for maybe 10 minutes even, a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night, whatever it is, that's Keva. That you don't miss that. You don't change that, I don't care what's going on, and there's laws about this. Shulchan Aruch says, you gotta keep that. And if for some reason one day you can't do it for, you know, whatever, emergency, you gotta make it up. So there's a certain period of time that we need to create as an established, set-aside time to learning Torah. That's presumably the main shot as to what he means here. We're going to do one more. You could read through it on your own if you want. I might have forgot to copy it, but I'll give you one more interesting explanation. I think I once gave a drush on this. Rabbi Lamb talks about it, but the Mefarshim and Perkei Avos say it here too. There's a pasuk in Tanakh that says, one of the Haftorahs that we do, it says, Hayikba, I think it's Shabbos HaGadol, I'm not sure, Hayikba Adam Es Elokim. I might be misquoting it a little bit, but it says, it literally means, can man steal from God? So the word Kava, the same Shoresh, Keva, also means steal. And Rabbi Lamb develops this idea. It's almost the opposite of the pshat, which means set aside time. In addition to setting aside time, you also have to steal time, right? So you're on the train, you have 5 minutes, you're in the doctor's office, you got 10 minutes, you have to steal time for Torah. Don't just be happy with your set aside time. If you have a few minutes here, a few minutes there, try to steal it. And there's some other explanations, we'll leave that for now. Number 11 here, Teferis Svi. This is an interesting technique that you can take away. I do this all the time. So what does it mean, emor ma'at vasei harbe? So Teferis Svi says, let's say you want to learn. So sometimes we get into this taiva, a good taiva, desire to learn a lot. I want to learn a lot. I want to know a lot. I'll give you a parallel, lahavdil. I want to clean my entire house, right? My house is a mess. I want to clean my entire house. And we get that, like, I really need to do this right now. I want to clean my entire house. What's the next step in that thought process? Despair. This is too much. It's yush. I can't do it. So therefore, I'm going to do nothing, right? So the emor ma'at ba'asei arbe, Teferis Svi says here, is a trick. Emor ma'at, say you're going to learn for 5 minutes. Say you're going to clean your house for 5 minutes. I've actually seen this in self-help books. This is a trick. They call it the five-minute rule. I'm not cleaning my entire house. I'm cleaning for 5 minutes. After the 5 minutes is over, I'm done. I don't have to go on. Now, we all know that once we start, we keep going. But that's not the point. Even if you don't keep going. 5 minutes, I do this little piece, and then I'm done. 5-minute rule. 5-minute rule with Torah. I don't need to learn Shas right now. I need to learn 5 minutes. I'm not finishing Tanakh today. I'm learning for 5 minutes. So emor ma'at, say I'm going to do a little bit, and then you're going to end up doing more. Once you get started, you'll probably keep the momentum. Source number 12. Countenance, smiling, happy. Okay, so what does this mean? How does this fit with Shammai? So Rabbeinu, it's in Hebrew. I'm going to just paraphrase as we go along. I'm not going to read the Hebrew. Rabbeinu Yonah says that it means that we need to show everybody a happy face. Seems to be the Pashup Shat, simple explanation. In the underline, the Meiri says that it's only referring to guests. Alachnasas Orchim. You have guests, you should smile at your guests. Why not everybody? So the Rashbats actually says, because who we're talking about? We're talking about Shammai. Right? Shammai didn't smile at everybody. Shammai yelled at people. He said, get out of here. So it can't be that he says, take everybody and be happy and smile or whatever. Now, maybe we could say his personality was different. I don't know. But the Rashbat says that if you take Shammai's personality within his teaching, it must be that it can't be that he meant smile at everybody. He means smile at the people you invite to your home. Rabbeinu Bachaya says, if you invite people over, and I think this is a big important mussar, because a lot of us have good hearts and we're in the right place and we like to invite people over, that's great. But if you invite them over and you yourself, think about him, Einan Ili Mili, if I myself am not in the right mental state, think about Oev Shalom Verodev Shalom, it's the same point, repeating itself. If I myself do not have my own internal peace, then I can't, it's not easy to be Rodev peace for other people. So I want to invite guests over, but guess what? I'm not in the best state of mind right now. So I'm going to invite them over, but I really want to get them out of here, right? As soon as I can. My step-grandmother had a sign in her house that said, all of our guests make us happy. Some by coming, others by going. Right? So if you invite people over and you can't smile at them and you can't give them the time of day, then Rabbeinu Bachaya says, then don't invite them. You're losing out. That's not the point. So we got to, again, I think it's the same recurring mental health theme. You got to take care of yourself before you can take care of others. If you're not going to smile at them, don't invite them. Now, finally, the last two things we're going to do, I'm going to show you something that you can look at on your own. If you turn the page, this scary looking face over here. So this is taken from this book over here, Emotions Revealed. It's by a psychologist by the name of Paul Ekman. He's an emotions specialist. If anybody here on the cover, it says, the TV show Lie to Me. It's about a detective who finds people lying based on their facial expressions. So it's based on his research. So he does research into facial expressions. And the page that I just photocopied for you, it's a double-sided page, is he talks about faking a smile. So there's two things you should know about faking a smile. One thing is called the facial feedback hypothesis, which means that with any emotion, that if you don't feel something, if you fake the expression, it not automatically, but most of the time, in most cases, it ends up that your body follows your face. So your feelings, your state of mind follows that expression that you're making on your face. So if you fake a smile, then oftentimes that could actually boost your mood. That's number one. But number two is that faking a smile doesn't work always. And this is important in terms of the Sefer Panim Yafot. Because when we fake, if you look at, again, this scary looking guy over here, and the reason why they chose this guy for this research back in the 1800s was because they were putting electrodes in his face to sort of like a Botox type of thing. And this was the only person, he didn't feel pain in his face. So this was the guy who they got. So if you look on the left-hand smile, it looks fake, because what this researcher back in the 1800s, Duchenne, found out was that you can't fully fake a smile, because your eyes, the expression around your eyelids, you cannot force that. That's pretty fascinating. Paul Ekman says the research seems to demonstrate this now too, is that you can't force the way that a smile looks around your eyes. If you don't actually feel happy or you're not smiling, you can't get that. If you flip the page, he talks about it a little bit more. It says that you can't contract the orbicularis oculi muscle. That's what it's called. So just takeaway, read it. I think it's interesting. You get the book if you want. Takeaway is that when we're faking stuff, so you say like, okay, I'll invite them over and I'll do Sefer Panim Yafot. You got to be careful. People pick up on this stuff. People know when you're faking it, and people know when it's real, because your fake smile does not look the same as your real smile. Last source for today, on the last page, is a photocopy from the translation of the Maharal on Pirkei Avos. It's a great book. It's in English, written by Rabbi Tuvia Besser, I believe. Recommend getting it if you want to learn the Maharal. He has some deep explanations, and you can read the whole thing on your own. I just want to show you what he's going to do. And the main point is that he takes all of the things we've learned from 12, 13, 14, and 15, all these Mishnayos and Hillel and Shammai, and he reconnects it to a broader philosophical dispute between the two. What is that? So if you look here on page 50, where it says Mishnah 15, everybody see it? It's double-sided, so it might be on the other side, depending how you flipped. So it says Mishnah 15 on the right-hand column, and the way the book is written, it goes from the right-hand column to the left-hand column there, the way I photocopied it. So he says here that Hillel's personality and Shammai's personality affected what they said in Pirkei Avos. So skip down, there's a little bit that we'll read. Hillel versus Shammai, a philosophical analysis. So he says, change is a physical characteristic. And for those who want it, it's in Hebrew on the last source on the outline, but here's the English. Change is a physical characteristic, and therefore it befits physical beings to change and adjust to other. The logical conclusion is that to the degree that we are physical beings, we should be accommodating and flexible. It's an important point. We should be flexible. But seichel, in terms of intellect, shouldn't be as flexible. Let's go to the left-hand column here. With this background, we are ready to understand the central point of contention between Hillel and Shammai's views of life. Hillel maintains that the guiding principle in determining how to bring Torah values into practice is to... beginning of 51, top left-hand side. Hillel maintains that the guiding principle in determining how to bring Torah values into practice is to consider people as physical beings in all situations. True, we have intellectual and physical components, but the combination of those two is still a physical human being. Since Hillel considers only our physical nature in determining conduct, he maintains that tolerance and patience should always prevail. We'll recap after we read Shammai. Shammai maintains that the guiding principle is to recognize both the spiritual intellect, the seichel, and the physical makeup of the human being as appropriate to the situation. Shammai agrees with Hillel that in the realm of worldly matters, it is appropriate to be forgiving and accommodating because that matches the physical nature of this world. However, Shammai maintains that the realm of Torah and mitzvos requires an approach on its own terms, and then we should be unmovable and uncompromising according to the characteristics of seichel. So just to explain what he's saying. He's saying that, what do we focus on? Do we focus on body? Do we focus on mind, intellect, seichel? And Shammai says, it depends. Are we talking about something physical or are we talking about something spiritual? When it comes to physical, you should be happy. You should be smiling. You should love people. And even Shammai would agree to that in mundane matters. But when it comes to Torah, when it comes to spiritual matters, what do I have to do? I have to be firm. You're trying to convert with some subtle trickery? Get away from me. We don't compromise when it comes to seichel, when it comes to intellect, when it comes to religion. Hillel says, no. We look at everybody and everything they do in the physical realm, even the spiritual. And now, for those who were here last week, tie this into the different things we heard about Hillel last week in terms of how he treats his body, in terms about how he treats other people, even in terms of the Shabbos, you know, the Shabbos versus weekday, the Kadosh versus the Chol. Again, if you weren't here, listen to it online. Hillel looks at everything in the realm of physical. And because of that, we're going to be tolerant and we're going to accept and we're going to do everything we can do in every realm of life with patience, with love, with peace, even if it's in the spiritual realm. I'm willing to compromise to make people feel better. Not every principle that I have, we got to know where to draw the line, but we have to be humble. We need humility, and we need to be nice, we need peace, etc. He goes on, and I encourage you to read it to explain how that fits in with some other stuff in the Mishnah, but we're going to leave it for there. So now, to just recap everything, We did a lot today. We saw four Mishnayos. We saw that we need to, some of the recurring themes include taking care of ourselves before we take care of others. It includes Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, pursue peace. Doesn't just mean to like it, to sit back on the couch. We got to actually do actively. We have to do things. We need to figure out techniques that work well in terms of how to create peace between people and in ourselves and in our own relationships. We saw that one of the things we're going to talk about in the future in terms of motivation, Hillel says, don't have the wrong motivation when serving God. You should be motivated for lishma purposes, not to get a good name. That's not going to turn out good for you. Imein ani li mili, I got to do stuff for myself before I do for others. I have to do stuff now. Stop procrastinating. We saw, finally, the last Mishnah in terms of Shammai, create permanence and regularity in our study of Torah. Do a lot, but say a little, and greet everybody with a pleasant countenance. And the broader themes we just elaborated on, and feel free to review those in last week's shiur to see how they play out. But the main idea is that Hillel is physical, Hillel is this world, Hillel is patient, Shammai is, that's very nice for physical things, but for spiritual things we need a little bit more fire, and we need a little bit more we need a little more rigidity, and we can't be as flexible as you want. Next week we will meet at the regular schedule time, 9:15 in the other room, barring any other problems. Please sign up for the emails to make sure that you are notified of everything that